Hello, everyone, and welcome to Million Dollar Decorating, the only podcast devoted to the worlds of design, decorating, and beautiful living. I'm your host, James Swan, and I am thrilled to have you subscribing to the show today. Head over to our website, milliondollardecorating.com, where you can learn more about our family of design enthusiasts. Add your name to our email list, then follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. You'll be part of all the great things that we have going on. And the really great thing that's happening right now is that I get to introduce you to our guest today. Tailored, modern, and elegant, rough, sleek, and bold, his interiors are individually conceived and meticulously crafted. His unique architectural and decorative solutions are detailed and executed, and with each project emphasize the integration of architecture and fine interior design. Born in upstate New York, he studied interior design at Pratt Institute in New York City, and then worked for noted interior design firms of Timothy McDonald and Brayshable Design. He established his namesake firm in 1990 and has completed hundreds of projects throughout the New York area, North Carolina, Florida, St. Bart's, China, and Morocco. He has participated in the prestigious Kips Bay Designer Showhouse, the New Jersey Design by the Shore Designer Showhouse, and has spoken at the Architectural Digest Home Show, as well as the Designer Series talks held at the D&D Building. His firm has been named one of the top 50 designers by New York Spaces magazine for 3 years running, and has been featured extensively in publications like El Decor, Interior Design, Traditional Home, New York Spaces, Palm Springs, Cottages and Gardens, and Aspire magazine. All of this keeps him quite busy making the world more beautiful. William McIntosh, welcome to Million Dollar Decorating.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on the program today.
So great to have you with us today. Now, is it William or is it Bill? That's the big question right now.
Let's go with Bill.
Bill, it will be. Bill, okay. Great having you with us. Take us back and tell us the story of you falling in love with the world of design for the first time, Bill.
You know, I think that I was, I feel like I've been aware of houses and buildings for so long. And we grew up in a small 1,200 square foot Cape Cod house. But nearby, they were building the new split level houses and the raised ranches. And, you know, this was the big time over in this neighborhood. So we would sneak over there on Sundays when the workmen weren't there, and we would climb through these houses. And I realized that I could understand the floor plans. I could understand the layouts of these houses, and they were just framed up. There was nothing there. Just by looking at the tracks on the floor. And I really had a sense, though, this is where the living room would be, and that would be a dining room, and this would be a den, and a fireplace is going to be built here. I really, at a very young age, I could understand how these houses were going to be laid out. And I don't know that the other kids took much notice or really cared. They were just more interested in climbing around on them. And at about that same time, we had a new branch a library built nearby, a public library. And it was a relatively small building, but this is the mid-60s. And it was designed in a very contemporary California style with sloped roofs and clear story windows and at one end, a tremendous stone fireplace with a big plate glass window looking out to a lawn. And I loved going there. I had a sense that this was different than what I lived in. This space felt different. And I would fantasize that I lived in the library. it just felt new and exciting. And also in Syracuse, we had a terrific Lowe's Theater, one of the great movie palace Lowe's theaters built in the 20s, and it's still there today, thank goodness. And we'd go to the movies on Saturdays, and I would go out to go use the bathroom, although I didn't necessarily have to. What I really wanted to do was go out into the lobby and walk around the lobby when it was empty. And this was a tremendous Moorish Orientalist palace. It's really quite spectacular with gigantic Moroccan lanterns hanging and gilded columns and dark hallways. It was really something. And again, I would fantasize that I lived in this theater, that it was my house. I think I was a very aspirational child.
Sounds like
growing
it,
yeah. up. But I think the key there is that I sense that these spaces felt different. You know, the library felt different than the theater, and both of them felt different than our Cape Cod house. And I think that was a very early awareness that spaces affected me in any event.
Wow. So it certainly captured your attention. When did you put the pieces together that this could become a career?
It's sort of funny. You know, I drew floor plans all the time as a kid. My dad was an engineer, and he gave me templates and scale rulers and things like that to play with. And as I got older and I was in high school, I was thinking that I was going to go to school for architecture. And I had a high school art teacher who was became a very dear friend and very close and very influential to me. And as I was applying to schools, and I knew nothing about applying to schools, and nobody in our family had ever gone to college, she really helped me going through the programs of the various schools and seeing what was available. Mm. And she also said, "You're going to New York. You're leaving here, and you're going to New York," which was the best advice I probably had ever gotten up to that point. But and I saw the interior design program at Pratt, and was like, "Oh my God, you can do this! This is really what it is." I love the interiors part of it, and right. I'm looking at it. Pratt had a very architecturally focused interiors program, and I'm seeing sections and elevations and floor plans, and that's all the stuff that I knew and I understood. I loved that stuff, but it was also it looked prettier than the architecture school. You know, it really just looked a little prettier than that. So I applied to Pratt and I got in and I went to Pratt. And the funny thing is, and I've joked about this for years, is I honestly thought I was going to go back to Syracuse after I finished school. And not saying anything, I'm sure there are interior designers in Syracuse now, but I certainly didn't know of a single one back then. Sure. And after one summer of staying in New York, I think I changed my plans and decided not to go back to Syracuse.
In hindsight, probably a good choice, right?
I think it was a good move, yes.
I think so, yeah. Well, so school wrapped and you landed your first job out of school. Tell us about that process.
I was lucky enough to have had a great thesis professor at Pratt by the name of Will Ching. And Will Ching hired me right out of school, and I worked in his firm down in Soho. This is the early 80s, and it was just wonderful. And he mentored me for the first year, but then at that point said, "You've got to go, you know, you've got to go into a bigger firm and see more." Ah. And after a little bit of bumping around, I ended up in Tim McDonald's office, which was wonderful. Tim is a real gentleman, and he's a real unsung master in this business, I think. And I learned an awful lot with him. We traveled to Nice to do a big project in France, and we did terrific houses in Connecticut. And he just had a very, very cosmopolitan aesthetic, and it was very sophisticated. But my real mentors in school and after school were Bob Bray and Mike Scheibel, and the opportunity came to work with them, and I took it and worked with them for almost 3 years. Wow. And it was really just one of the nicest experiences from the standpoint that Bob was particularly was quite brilliant and really could just create such magic out of the smallest gestures. Mm-hmm. That was really a terrific, terrific experience. But fortunately or unfortunately, I was very impatient to be on my own and very, very headstrong to do that. And in those days, this is the late 80s, everybody just went into business whenever they wanted to. I mean, it was no big deal. All my friends went into business. And then you went out of business. And if you went out of business, you went and got a job. So you didn't really think about it that much. And it didn't have a lot of drama surrounding it. So after a few failed attempts, finally I got one terrific client in West Hampton with a beach house. And she and her husband really let me go at it. Mm-hmm. And that really was the project that allowed me to go into business and stay in business.
Well, thank them the next time you chat with them, right?
I still do.
Do you?
Yes. Absolutely.
Great. Well, tell us then about what you're working on right now. What's on the boards and what's got you smiling these days?
We've got so much going on. We're having an incredibly busy couple of years here, and probably the next year or so going forward. We're doing a big apartment up at 432 Park, which is very interesting, with leather floors and all kinds of very luxe deluxe elements. We're doing a couple of beach houses, one of which is very modern and very colorful, and the other one, which is more traditional and very neutral. So I'm kind of getting to enjoy both ends of that aesthetic line. But I think the project that's probably got my most interest right now, I'm most excited to see it come to completion, which will be later this year, is a house that we're doing that's got a rather mid-century Chicago kind of Cranbrook school aesthetic. It's rather formal. The exterior is Roman brick. The stonework is almost classical, but it's very, very cleaned up. And the interior is entirely terrazzo on the first floor and up to the second floor, including a terrazzo staircase. It's really got some fantastic things going on in terms of material and ideas. From the decorative standpoint, I'm employing a lot of these beautiful Swedish Art Deco light fixtures and accessories that I've gotten into lately. Mm. And Swedish Art Deco is more... It's softer and prettier than you usually associate with Art Deco, which can sometimes get a little too muscular or a little bit too jazzed. So there's this wonderful prettiness layered on top of this formal classicism. So that's the project that's really got me turned on right now.
Well, and you've got our interest and curiosity piqued here. So
yes.
Hopefully we'll see photos at some point.
I hope so.
All right. We'll keep watching the website and look forward to that when that happens.
You know it.
Looking back over the career, Bill, what is it that you love the most about the work that you get to do these days?
You know, I always say that there's a lot of good parts to this business. I mean, I really think if you're going to, as a career, it can really be good. I think that I always say that if interior design, when it's good, it's really good. And when it's bad, it's still pretty good. you know, we get to it, and there's still the appreciation, honestly, after all these years, of being kind of amazed that, wow, we get to do this. You get to come up with these ideas, right. And if you're lucky enough to have the clients with the trust mostly the trust, honestly, I won't even say it's the money, it's just the trust, to let you go and realize something, and you walk in the door some days and you look at what you've done and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe they let us do that. It's really great. So that's the best part about it, is that you still get that excitement. And then you also get the excitement of your clients who you see them get turned on, you see them really appreciating the work, and that's very, very fulfilling. I've got a wonderful client who came to me a year or so after he'd moved in to his house, and he said, honestly, Bill, I walk in the door in the evenings and I still have that moment of saying to myself, you know, gosh, I can't believe I live here. Wow. And that's really a terrific, I think it speaks volumes about him, but it also, it's just wonderful that he appreciates the work that much.
Absolutely. Well, take that same coin, Bill, and flip it over, because where there are those things that we love and that we cherish about our work, there are the challenges too, at least every once in a while.
Yes.
What's the biggest challenge that you face today in accomplishing the work that you set out to do?
I think one of the things that we're always up against is expectation management, which is managing the client's expectations. And it's generally about cost and time, how much things are going to cost and how long it's going to take. These TV shows where things happen in a week and it costs, you know, $6,000, it's just a fantasy. It really doesn't go that way in the real world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really a very important thing to make people understand the reality and the parameters of their particular project. And I know I've lost work because I've told people this is how much it's going to cost and this is how long it's going to take. And somebody else came along and told them it's going to cost less and it's going to happen faster. And they got the job. And of course, it took as long as I said it would and it cost as much. But I think that's really one of the things that we deal with, especially with primarily with younger clients or people who really haven't done this before. When you've had clients that are repeat clients or who have done several houses over their lifetime, which I've had many of, they know what they're getting into.
Right.
But the younger clientele often doesn't. They have no idea, and they're brought up on these TV shows, which give them an unrealistic idea of how this goes.
Well, so that's an interesting jumping off point, Bill. Talk to our listeners at home, because some of them, many of them, may just fall into that latter category, that they have limited experience, and yet they're looking for ways to create more beauty in their own home. What would your message be to them today?
Well, speaking to them about how to create beauty in their homes easily the expectations?
Why don't you weave them together? See what you come up with.
Well, I think that the first thing, if you're going to hire a designer, you have to accept the fact that you're hiring a designer. So it is going to cost you something, and it is going to take a certain amount of time. You want to find somebody that you trust. You want to find somebody that you can relate to. You want to find somebody whose your aesthetics are aligned. And you need to listen to them. And I know I'm speaking from the designer standpoint, but you really do need to trust that they do have your best interest in mind. They want the best project, and they want the project to go quickly. It's in everyone's best interest that a project be done in a reasonable amount of time. And it's also in everyone's best interest that it come in on the budget that everybody expected, because right. to have conflict or issues or have a project that can't be completed because you've depleted all of the funds is foolish. Nobody is in business to do that. We're in business to do good work, to serve our clients, and really to have everyone happy at the end of the day.
Indeed, and amen. So now shift gears a little bit and talk to us for a moment about the place that you call home. What was it like creating your own space? And were there surprises for you at the end of the day, spaces that you maybe have loved or fallen in love with a little more than you expected?
It's interesting. I live in here in New York, but my husband and I also have a house in Morocco, which we designed together. And that's maybe the better example of how it goes. I mean, we're both designers, so it was a really interesting process to be simultaneously on both sides of the table as client and designer, and we really did a lot of soul searching at various decibel levels. And really struggled through some of the process. I think designing for yourself is very difficult. You feel like you've got so much riding on it. You're self-conscious about it in that way.
Sure.
And then of course we can't live like our clients. We don't have our clients' money, so you start to become a little bit more realistic and creative as to how you create these things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to note that you know, most as designers we can't necessarily all live like our clients do, but you can have nice things in the sense that you can have a you can have beautiful sheets, and you can have terrific glassware or tableware. You know, you can light a candle, you could dim a light, you can create atmosphere and give yourself luxury that's not about having, you know, 20,000 square feet of space.
Right, or a vast budget.
And that's where we look. We're like, well, you know, we can have beautiful things on our table. We can have lovely fabrics on furniture that we have. And you have, again, it goes back to being realistic about your expectations.
Sure.
What can we do? And I don't know if I've been entirely clear on this, James. So
I'm definitely getting a picture. So think about this for a moment. What might our listeners then find surprising about the place that you call home?
I think what they would find surprising, given that, you know, the work I do is pretty tailored, and it's really meticulously thought out. And our place here in New York is, it kind of looks like, I'm looking around at it. I'm here now. I'm looking around. It looks like a summer house. It looks like, uh-huh. You know, we've got sisal on the floor, you know, and bare wood and white sliv covered furniture. There's no curtains on the windows. This artwork leaning up against the walls. It's a kind of a funky minimalist mix of high and low. You know, we've got some things that are really important and valuable to us, and then we've got things that they're here today, but they may be gone tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. But it works for you, right?
It works. Yeah. I mean, honestly, we would probably even strip it down more.
Interesting.
We'd probably take it way, way down. But, you know, there's just a few practicalities of life. You need a cabinet to store your things in.
Oh, yeah. The doggone practicality stuff, right?
Yes. Yeah.
If you had an opportunity, Bill, to spend some time with a designer style hero of yours, someone whose work you've admired, really looked up to, they might be living, might be deceased. Who would you pick? Who would you select to spend an hour with?
I'd probably pick Bob Bray, although he's still very much alive.
Sure.
but I haven't seen him in years since he retired. But he's so smart and well-read, and he's so funny. And as I said before, he could just create, you know, the most sublime spaces out of the simplest gestures, and the clarity of his ideas were really just so enjoyable. When I worked for him, I would be sitting there, you know, I'm a young guy, and I'm sitting there torturing something to death, and he would walk over and he would say in his Oklahoma drawl, you know, just make it pretty. That was really the best advice, because that's really what it come down to. Just make it pretty, just, you know, and you're killing yourself with things. And he just would say, just make it pretty. That's all you got to do. So Bob was good company. He's very good company.
Wow. What a great selection. And what great advice. Just make it.
Yes.
Pretty. Yeah. That sort of brings it all down to the most basic level, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does.
All right. We'll take that. Absolutely. We'll take that. Let's talk about design trends for a second. Is there a design trend that you're watching in the marketplace right now, Bill, that you are going to be really happy to see go by the wayside?
Yes.
Is there
Can
a list?
I pick two?
go for it.
Well, the first one, it's probably my longer standing one, is to see the whole Palm Springs Hollywood Regency thing go away. I just think it's a horse that's been beat too long, and it's been cheapened down, you know, to such a degree that I really just think there's just nothing more that can be done with it. And I know people have built entire careers on it, but I just am ready to see that one go.
Okay.
And the other one, that I think is really wearing out its welcome surprisingly fast, is the whole lighting trend of sticks and balls. Everything's a stick and a ball, a stick and a ball, a stick and a ball.
Yep.
All these lighting fixtures that are out there now, everything's a stick with a ball on the end. That's it.
Yep.
And it just, I think we've pretty much don't know what we can do with that one.
Time to move on.
Those are my two.
Fair enough. Let's do this one. Let's do a hypothetical for a moment. We pray it never happens, but if there were a fire at the house tonight, family, loved ones, animals, they're all safe. But what's the one object in your home, Bill, that you would risk the flames to save?
I have a small bronze sculpture by an artist by the name of Constantino Nivola. And he was an Italian artist who lived out on the East End from about 1940 to his death in 1988. And he did these wonderful sculptures that were mostly based on a female form, but simplified and abstracted. Mm-hmm. And I saw a retrospective of his in 1989 at the Parish Museum out in Southampton after he had died. And I was totally blown away by it. It's just beautiful work. And he would work in wood or in stone or pieces that he would cast. And the figures were just beautiful. It really moved me. And I took that catalog from the show. And I swear to God, I traveled with that catalog for years. I literally would take it on vacation just because I wanted it around me. I wanted to look at these pictures, and I never tired of it. Mm. And one day, about 10 years ago, we were in East Hampton, and at the drawing room represents his estate out there. And I saw a piece in the window. And I mean, honestly, this is something I could never afford. And so to see a small one, I thought, oh, well, maybe.
Right.
And we went in. And we got into a conversation with Victoria, who works there or worked there at the time. And I told her the story about the catalog. And she said, well, maybe you'd like to meet Ruth Nivola, Constantino's wife, who was about 90 years old at the time. And he said, she still lives here in the Springs. And I said, oh, my God, that would just be an amazing thing. So she set it up for the next day. And Martin and I went out to the house, bringing some jams with us, you know, a little gift for her. And I am telling you, she was the most energetic 90-year-old woman you'd ever met. So sweet, so lovely. And the remarkable thing was she spent the entire afternoon with us. She brought us out to his studio, which was still intact and had many pieces still under tarps and papers. And she just let us wander through all the pieces. It was remarkable.
Oh, my God.
Brought us into the house, brought out drawing books of his sketchbooks. And the house itself is quite famous. It's in the Springs. And they were friends with Le Corbusier. And he had gone there one summer, probably several summers. But one summer, he painted a mural on the wall the dining room. And it's still there today. Wow. It really was one of those extraordinary experiences. So I have my – oh, and I have to say, she gave me, upon leaving, a gift – of a little maquette of one of his sculptures made of brass, just a little maquette. It was a study for a larger piece, and she gave that to me as a gift. So,
oh my goodness,
I would definitely take my Constantino Nivola sculpture
for all of the many good reasons above. Yeah. Absolutely, what a beautiful story! Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome,
Bill. Something tells me you're a book lover. Are you?
I've got a lot of books in my library.
Okay, then I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to ask for one book recommendation, something that you believe ought to be on the bookshelf of every design lover who's listening.
Okay, one, but I have two.
Oh.
One's more of an academic choice. It's a book called The Elements of Style. But anybody would enjoy this. It's been around for years, and it's a thick, it's probably a 2.5-inch thick, 3-inch thick book, and it's all the architectural elements that make up any particular period of architecture from the Tudor period up to late 20th century. And you can go through there. If you're working on a historical house, that's great because you can see, well, what are the appropriate windows, or what are the appropriate railings or doors or hardware, cabinetry. And I'm on my second copy because the first one got all dog-eared. But it's really a very interesting book to look through. It's fascinating. It's full of photographs and sketches and renderings. And it's really a terrific illustrative text on what makes up every significant architectural style from literally the 1400s to today. So I would recommend everybody look that one up.
That's a good one. I'm looking at it on my bookshelf right now, and it's got worn corners. So yes,
very good.
I know what you mean.
I love that book.
It is a good one. There's no doubt about that. Great. Well, we will post a link to that in the show notes section, so our listeners who don't already own it can click on the link, add it to their library, and I know that they'll be appreciative to you for that recommendation.
Right.
Bill, that brings us down to the very last question. Are you ready for this one?
All right.
All right. Here we go. Imagine if you woke up tomorrow morning in a brand new world. It's physically identical to the Earth that you know, but you don't know a single soul. You still have all the experience and the knowledge you currently possess. Your food and shelter are taken care of, but your new home is empty. All you have is a laptop, a mobile phone, and about $1,000 in your pocket. What would you do over the next 7 days to begin to decorate your new home?
Well, you know what I love about this question is that it makes me think of when you're young and you get your first apartment and you've got nothing. Wow. And there's nothing better than the first night in your first apartment when you've got nothing. So, and all you've got is your mattress on the floor, you've got a little table of some sort, and a lamp, and a bottle of wine. So, I mean, that is a great feeling because you've got nothing but potential. You know, you feel so free, and you feel like you've got nothing but potential. So, I imagine I'd have a nice mattress from Beckley, some terrific sheets. Maybe a pretty tray on the floor instead of an old box, and probably a much better bottle of wine. And I think that would be the terrific way to spend that $1,000.
That and a lot of potential, right?
Yeah, a lot of potential.
I like that. Bill McIntosh, what a joy getting to speak with you today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, James. This was fun.
Glad to have you with us today. We want to say a big thank you to our subscribers who've tuned into the show today. You know that you mean a lot to us. In fact, none of this means anything without you. So thanks for tuning into the show, making the show an important part of your life, and for sharing news about the show with your friends and helping us to continue to grow. Remember to go to the website, milliondollardecorating.com, where you can catch the notes from today's show. We'll post a link to Bill's website so you can follow all the amazing things that he and his team are creating there. Post a link to the amazing resource book, Elements of Style, that he's recommended to us. If you don't already own it, it's a good one to have in your library. You won't regret that addition, I promise you. While you're there on our site, click a few more buttons. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. And finally, and most importantly, remember that it's up to you to make your world more beautiful. Room Styler is the most user-friendly and widely used design platform for designers, furniture retailers, manufacturers, corporations, and millions of interior design enthusiasts. Quickly convert from 2D plans to 3D render and view on any device. Visit roomstyler.com today.